Okay. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for your attention. Welcome back after the summer break to our knowledge transfer series of talks. So we brought the sun out for you, or you brought the sun out for us, depending on which way you want to look at it. Many of you, all of you, will hopefully be aware of the success at Chelsea, and Sean is going to tell us about how it all happened. I don't want to steal any more of Sean's thunder, apart from we've got some wonderful displays over there for after Sean's talk and whilst we're waiting for the food. But without me taking up any more time, Sean, over to you.
Thank you, Paul. Hopefully everyone can hear me. What we thought we'd do is just really share with you some of the preparation, some of the background, and also a little bit of the science that we presented at Chelsea, and perhaps some of our concerns. And towards the end of it, we'll show a video which was produced by Lindsay Brook, which actually captures a bit more of the flavour of the whole thing. But I've called it Taking the Tractors to Chelsea. I think to some extent that reflects maybe one of our concerns in terms of going to Chelsea, is we do a lot of agriculture, we work with a lot of crops. And crops are not really flowers, so I think from the outset we had concerns within the committee that we were actually doing possibly not what the organisers wanted us to do, and we really weren't sure how well it would go down, certainly in terms of judging. Also, before I get too far, I have to say this is a large effort from a large group of people, many of whom are in the audience today, and it, as you'll be able to see, it's taken a lot of effort, and it was obviously clearly well worth it, and I think we got our message across as well. But I think it's hard to sort of appreciate how much work is involved until you're heavily into it, by which time it's too late to say no. So what I'd like to do really to begin with is to give a little bit of an idea of the planning, the timescales that we were working to, some idea of the sorts of things we were attempting to achieve, what the ideas behind them were, and then go on and really try and show some of the photos from the actual show itself and how close we got to what we were trying to achieve before doing a final video. I'm not going to take too much time because there's quite a lot of material on the bench at the back from the actual Chelsea show, which is also quite a good way to see more. Most of the photographs here are actually from the first 2 days of Chelsea, the press day and the members' day. There are a lot more photographs from later on, and some of those are slightly more informal, perhaps. So they're well worth having a look at. So this is really the timeline. So it was in March 2011 that the Knowledge Transfer Committee decided it would be a good idea to go to Chelsea if Chelsea would have us. And in October, the call came round. And essentially, the call was for urban greening, which we sort of ummed and ahed about, because while we do a lot of work with crops and we do work with ornamentals to some extent, we don't do a huge amount of urban greening. But it was really about that point that we learned that the theme for the next year was actually going to be 100 years of plant science, because it was 100 years of Chelsea. So we thought we'd delay for a year, because that theme fitted extremely well with what we were trying to show. It actually coincides reasonably well in terms of timescales on this site as well. So it was a year after, really, 2 or 3 months before we expected the deadline, that we started to get Central University involved in terms of marketing, but also in terms of our man who was managing a lot of a stand build. So Media Maker in Nottingham was involved in a lot of the actual presentational side of things. And we had a lot of discussion in the committee about exactly what it is we were trying to do. And I think in the end we were quite clear that what we wanted to do was really have an opportunity to talk to people about the science we were doing. We thought it was quite important that we didn't go there to market undergraduate places or to try to win research money. It was really trying to have a conversation with the people who were coming around Chelsea about what we were doing and to find their opinions on it. In November, unfortunately, as these things often happen, They announced that the theme had changed, so no longer 100 years in plant science. It's now evolution of the garden. So we had a bit of an emergency meeting at that point because the deadline was supposed to be quite soon. And Paul came up with evolution of the global food garden, which sort of gets in there just about, I guess. So we decided it was still worth going ahead with. The submission, which was actually quite late, and that particular year or this year, Chelsea seemed to be running a little bit late, so we were putting the submission in early January and really found in mid-February that we had been accepted, which sort of meant we had about 4 months to do everything. Now, that suggests that we hadn't done anything at all before that, which is not true. We had a reasonable amount of plant material growing. We had quite a lot of background in terms of what it was we wanted to do, but we were quite reluctant to spend any money just in case they turned around and said no, and then we spent somebody's money that they kindly given us and it didn't go anywhere. But luckily it was agreed, so we could start moving forward quite fast. Marketing suggested, Paul's suggestion was a little bit of a mouthful, but so we ended up with food for the future. And then the actual show itself in May ran from the 20th to the 25th, including the press day and the members' day, first members' day, which is where most of the photographs come from, because we had a team from Central University doing communications and taking photographs and doing video. And then the public days came later, so it ran through all the way to Saturday. And it was a surprisingly long week because it's 8 till 8, and we were working shifts of 8 hours with a little bit of overlap in the middle and a bit of extra help around lunchtime. And it was an incredibly cold week. Our fear beforehand, I think, was that all of the plants would look very bad because they were struggling with the heat. In the end, actually, we had a lot of problems with tropical crops because they were struggling with the cold. So that's the timeline. So it was quite a long initial build-up, but once we got going, we had to move quite fast. So this is really an outline of the design that we originally submitted, based on the organization of the stands in the years before. And the basic idea at that point was we would have a timeline, because it was 100 years of plant science, which would run across the back. And what we would do is we would talk on the back about some of the research that's been done in Sutton Bonington, and to some extent Nottingham more generally, and then also talk about what we're doing now. So each of these subjects, so we had a section on cereals, we had a section on tomatoes as fruit, section on roots, and for each of those we'd say what we're doing now and what we've done in the past and how that links. There was some supporting information provided by Central University, which I think helped in terms of the bid because it made it look quite professional. But obviously we had to rethink because of a change in the title, but also we had another major sort of, not last minute panic, but a slight panic because the store we were allocated didn't actually have any way of going through. So at that point we had to sort of redesign. The basic idea is still very much the same, so we still have the different sections. We have this peanut in the middle, which is was used for demonstration and also for brochures. And we also were envisaging growing material from here all the way across, which was also quite a challenge in the end. So if I just say a little bit about what we were trying to do, and the text on the left is from one of our committee meetings in about March, where we're starting to get, well, we have a reasonable idea of what we're trying to do, but not quite sure how it will all fit together. So the idea was really sort of to try to direct people round in a clockwise fashion, going from the first wall, which is basically an introduction. And what we're trying to do in terms of the first wall is really say, we have this issue of increasing world population. We have an issue in terms of how do we increase food production and potentially food production under circumstances where we have less inputs, where we have less water, we have less nitrogen. To some extent, the quality of the land available is reducing. And then just to sort of give some of the areas that we're working in the rest of the stand, to say how we think there's possibilities in terms of improving the situation and what areas we need to really be looking at for future work. And then we go into a series of individual walls, which I'll talk about, and then try to summarise that at the end. So try and pick up those individual messages in a final figure, which we'll come on to say this is what we think needs to happen in terms of research for future food security. And one of the key things, I think, as well, is we weren't just thinking about temperate UK agriculture, but we were very much thinking about across the world. So roughly half of the plants we took with us were tropical plants, which we managed to grow in our future crop glass, as is down the bottom. And that's actually a picture of some yam, which you probably can't see that well. But we'll put the videos on later so you can have a look at the pictures. The second wall was a mix. There was this question of whether us taking crops to Chelsea made any sense. We were sort of arguing, really, well, it's a Royal Horticultural Society, so horticulture includes crops. And then we cheated a little bit because we put some arable in. So wheat and rice, which are really the staples for a large part of the world, we also wanted to have a look at, particularly in terms of the work that's being done here for wheat and rice. Tomatoes, really, because we have quite a lot of tomato research here, but also as a way of looking at soft fruits. So if you can understand what's happening in a tomato, you can possibly understand what's happening in other soft fruits. And then there's quite a lot of work going on in roots, particularly in terms of modelling, but also in terms of using X-ray technology to actually visualise those roots as they grow. So these are actually the final pictures. So we went for something fairly clear, large, so that people weren't spending all their time trying to work out what on earth it was in the background. And then interlinking information in terms of what's important about cereals, what's happening in wheat, what's happening in rice, and the same for fruits and roots. And for each of these, we had a small tablet, and they're over there, which was basically running a sort of PowerPoint presentation of some of the work that we're doing, just to give more of an idea if people were interested in what they were seeing. One of the other things that we're involved in at the moment, and I'm particularly involved in, is Crops for Future Research Centre, which is based at our campus in Malaysia, where we're really going back and we're looking at some of the minor crops that have been used to see whether those crops potentially could fill some of the gaps that are opening up in terms of food supply, and particularly in terms of nutritional value. So things like cereals produce a lot of calories, but relatively little nutritionally. So having a balanced diet is as important as having enough calories. And this is an artist's impression of the three domes which we're building in Malaysia, and which the second one is about two stories high at the moment, and we're still going. It's supposed to be finished at the end of, or the middle of next year. We should have all of the domes. But we're already doing research on that. So that was the plasma screen running a video showing what we were doing, showing some of the background. Then coming around right to the end wall, an artist who was commissioned by the university actually put together this rather interesting plant, where what we were trying to do on this is not suggest that this is where we should be going in terms of an actual plant, but to try and point out some of the characteristics of what we actually think are needed in plants. So if you're growing in an arid environment, deeper root depth is quite important in terms of picking up water that's been delivered by rains. The amount of chlorophyll, the functionality of the shoots can have an effect on how much light can be captured. And also the leaf angle is really quite important in terms of how the light gets into the canopy and gets captured. So the idea was to try and draw together all of the different threads from the different walls into this final figure. So that was the theory. And one of the other things that RHS recommended, and they were obviously right, is we had some element of interactivity there. So it wasn't just a case of people wander around, read things, maybe look at tablets. So two of the things we actually had on the peanut, one each end, is a machine we use in research to actually measure how green leaves are, called a SPAD meter. So that's used on a fairly regular basis. It should reflect how much chlorophyll is in a leaf. In addition, we had what's called a durometer, and in essence, this is a machine where you basically push it against something. This little end bit can move back in, and you can take a measurement of how much that moves back in when it's pushed against something. So something that's soft, it won't move in very much. Something that's hard, it will push it all the way back. And this rapidly became a squashometer. And we used it on tomatoes, so we used it for the tomatoes. So, okay, we've done all of that side of things. We've spent a lot of time on putting together paperwork, health and safety paperwork, things like that, as well as brochures and useful paperwork. And it came to the day where we were to drive everything down. So this is the day before, just packing up. So these are actually, one of the things we were taking with us was sweet potato. So we'd grown sweet potato in hydroponics, so in an aqueous solution, and we were taking those down to try and put across that frame. These are yams. So again, yams were going on the first wall because they have these lovely heart-shaped leaves. And this was other material for Chelsea, all of which has been grown in a tropical glasshouse. Being packed up and made ready, and everyone's fingers crossed that it would actually get to London in one piece. And in the end, we had two vans going. This is one of them, so you can see we've got trolleys either side in cellophane with plants and things pushed back into there. This is a packing team, most of the packing team. And it was their job to get all the way to London through the Inner Ring Road and arrive at Chelsea without breaking suddenly, which they did, which was good. So this is actually the stand. There's a video of the stand construction, which we'll put on one of the laptops at the back, so you can have a look at that actually happening. But this is effectively the stand. We're in the Grand Marquis, so this is, I don't know how big this is, but it's enormous. If you've been to Chelsea, you're probably familiar with it. But it was my first time, so it was enormous. And we're actually in this corner. So you can see two of the walls here. And as I said, it was absolutely freezing. And it seemed to be funneling down right from that corner. So this is, I'll just run through some pictures of the individual walls, give you an idea of what it looks like. And then we'll look at the video, because it's a lot more dynamic. But this is essentially the first wall, so you can see the yam plants growing up around the information. You can just about see the sweet potatoes climbing up through that frame. And you can see various bits on the peanuts in the middle, including the durometer and the SPAD meter at the other side, with some leaves from wheat that you can look at. Over on the second wall, you can just see Eric tending his hydroponic rice. So he took hydroponic rice as well. So this is the second wall. So this is the cereals wall. One of the things that there's a lot of research going on at the moment in Nottingham is in terms of looking back to ancestor species of wheat to try and bring in new variation. Because part of the problem with current variation is a lot of it's been selected under very high input situations. So you may lose a lot of the interesting genes that are actually quite important in terms of resilience, drought tolerance, things like this. So one of the things that's being done by a number of groups is to bring that material into new pre-breeding material that potentially could become varieties at some point with breeders' help. And Eric does a lot of work on photosynthesis, where he's really looking at how do you improve the efficiency, particularly in tropical species like rice, which are our staple diet for something like a billion people. This is the fruit. So here we have two tomatoes. We took two tomatoes. We took a normal tomato and a tomato that has a natural mutation in it, which prevents it going, prevents it ripening. So the ones on the left at the top basically sat there all week. And the normal tomatoes, once we started using the durometer on them, had to be replaced every half day because otherwise they go splat. David Bellamy came to visit. There are no GM tomatoes here, so he's perfectly safe. And Graham Seymour is the person that runs a lot of the tomato research. But really the idea was, for soft fruits, tomatoes got a fully sequenced genome. So we know the genes in it. A lot of other soft fruits we don't. And then the question is, can we use tomato as a model to understand how ripening works? If we can do that, maybe we can identify how we get tomatoes into supermarket shelves, for instance, that actually taste of things. Possibly. And then the roots, I think we have a rhizotron, do we have? Oh, well, there will be a rhizotron. But essentially this is a really neat and simple way of actually looking at root development. So you can't see it that well. There's a video over there and we'll bring one in. But basically you tilt it so the roots grow against the glass and then you can take the paper off and you can actually see the root shapes. And one of the reasons for being interested in root shape is root shape has a big effect on how well crops get hold of resources. And it's also one of the things that in the Green Revolution was never really selected for, because it's difficult to do. It's hard to go and dig your way through lots of roots and get sensible answers. But some of the work that's going on now and the tablet is actually over there and it shows some of these images, allows you to use X-ray CT to actually see what's going on as they grow. And in addition to that, there's a lot of work that's been going on in the Center for Plant Integrated Biology, which is trying to generate a model of how a root works. Because if you can identify how a root works in, say, a model species like Arabidopsis, which is the standard small species everybody uses to do model work, you can start to understand how you translate that information to something like wheat. Then we have the food for the crops for the future side of things, where we're actually growing. These are all tropical crops. You might just about recognise foxtail millet. It's not quite fully seeded yet, but it's getting there. But we had Bambara groundnut, which is the African original equivalent of peanut, and proso and finger millets. And millets have been used for a very, very long time. They're one of the first cereals, but they've been displaced quite a bit by wheat and rice. But many of them actually have good characteristics in terms of particularly resilience to stress. So it may well be some of these species are actually quite good ones to go back to and improve. And they could make a useful contribution to agriculture in the future. Probably our biggest draw, I don't know how well you can see this, but again, we've got pictures, is we had a company called Greenscape, who basically provided us with the materials to provide to grow a vertical wall. And it's a vertical wall of crops. So top left, you can probably recognize brassicas. At top right, we have some lettuce. There's quite a lot of vigna in there, strawberries, and various other things. Species that we're actually doing some work on in Sutton Bonington. So we thought it was an interesting way to actually represent those. And we had a lot of people coming up, wanting to take photographs of it and be photographed with it. Greenscape, Charles from Greenscape's on the left there. Mark, who was involved in helping us get a lot of this stuff going in terms of the plant work, is on the right. And Sasha, who's actually involved in the root side of things, has obviously been told to sit like that while a photograph's taken. And then the last one, in the end, we originally wanted to have it a little bit more interactive so that there would be flaps and information hidden and things like that. In practice, we severely ran out of time. But we got what we think is actually quite a nice summary, as well as the image itself, which brings together a number of the themes that we've been talking about in terms of why, what we want, or what we think the characteristics that roots need, leaves need, and fruits will need in the future in terms of increasing production, or at least stabilizing production, but reducing the resources that you need to do that, particularly in the more harsh environments. And you can see, actually, you can see on here the sweet potato. So it's actually in hydroponics with an air stone. And it's been wrapped around and goes across about, well, it goes across a bit. We actually put other plants at the top because it was struggling. And I think it was, in many ways, the sweet potato was our biggest struggle because we had an aphid attack about 3 weeks before the show. And it was awful. It had just about recovered by the time we got to the show. So, in fact, it actually didn't look too bad. But it was really touch and go. In terms of the sort of interaction side of things, both of the machines are actually very simple to use. So the SPAD meter, you basically just clamp onto a leaf, and it gives you a reading to say how much green there is in that leaf. And the gyrometer, as you can see, you basically just push it against a tomato, and it will give you a reading of how firm that tomato is. So one of the things we did was to get the general public, as far as we could persuade them, to have a go at these things, to write down comments, and we also took a note of their data. So one of the things we did when we got back was to actually plot their data and put it on the website so people could see what happened. And what we expected to happen didn't really happen. Particularly in terms of the SPAD meter, where everything basically stayed pretty much as it was, because it was so cool, it wasn't really that worried about going further into senescence, so we didn't see any movement. The tomato did more or less what we expected, in that the green ones stayed green, stayed like bullets. The red ones, we had some interesting explosions. But we could also clearly show that there's a very big difference in terms of those. Now, we're not suggesting that sort of tomato ends up on the supermarket shelves, because obviously you can get green tomatoes at the end of the season, whatever happens. It's more that it allows us to see where the process within the tomato ripening stops. And using that information, we can start to understand how it would normally work. And that makes us, it puts us in a position where we can potentially go out and we can look for smaller effects, but which still have effects. Tuesday, well, the judging's on Monday, so on the press day, and we were told to go away for about 3 hours while they did the whole of the environment section. And they spent a very long time doing it. I was quite surprised. And then you come in early on Tuesday, and hopefully something is there. I think it's only from speaking for myself, I think it's fair to say, I thought what we were trying to do in terms of talking to people about what we were doing was right. I think it actually worked quite well. But I really didn't think the judges would be that keen on it, because it was crops, and crops don't have big flowers usually. By the time they're producing something, they're usually looking fairly tatty. So I was sort of expecting, well, if we're really lucky, we get a silver. But I was quite prepared to get nothing at all. So when we actually turned up and there was a gold there, it would be fair to say it was a surprise, certainly for me. And I think the word that gets used a lot is delighted, and that usually implies there's a bit of surprise in there somewhere. So not only did we get the gold for the stand itself within the environment section, we actually got the best stand in the environment section out of 10 or 11, I think it was, which really was a surprise. Which meant that Katie could go up and almost touch Alan Titchmarsh. He had his minders on hand. Although it must be said, the Australians who won the garden one were all over him, so a little bit more enthusiasm you would have got there, I think. So that was really good, and one of the things that was quite nice about it in a way is that we also still had the communications people with the videos and the cameras. They were still there on the same day. So everybody got very excited. And it certainly helped. I think if we'd got nothing, it would have been more difficult. But as it turned out extremely well. A lot better, I guess, than we anticipated. And the bit that surprises me the most is the top one on the judging panel, plants. Very good. Because we weren't sure about that one. So that was great. I mean, we were seriously delighted. Extremely cold, but seriously delighted. So what I'll try and do is just, there's a 7-minute video, if I can get this to work. If I can't, I'll do it another way. Oops, I can't do that on there, can I? Sorry, I'll have to turn around because I don't have a copy on this. No. Let me just end that and I'll... So I think this gives, if I can get it to play, a little bit more of a flavour of the actual thing. Let's just take that back up. Unfortunately, I don't know... I'll put the sound up in a second. I don't know, maybe not. We might have to go with that, I'm afraid.
Understanding of plants at any single level. society in general. The RHS is one vehicle at Chelsea through which we can disseminate that, because you get to touch people that would never normally see. The same way with Botanic Gardens, for me, as director of Cambridge, I welcome people in, whatever their interest, because you can always feed a little bit of information into them, not overtly but commonly. Same here, people will come, and you've made a beautiful stand here in the main tent in Chelsea, and people can go away knowing a little bit more, and you can puzzle them, make them think, and make them try and understand the basis of our world security, because the world depends on plants. Humans depend upon a subset of those plants, and you are concerned with that subset.
So that's really not got very much chlorophyll in at all. That's dead.
Everybody grows wheat, rice, or maize. But sometimes those are really not that suited to those environments where the soils are not so good, you don't have much fertilizer available.
Hello, Chelsea.
Hello.
It's the centenary, 100 years. We've been here since 1930. I haven't. There are some mornings it feels like it. But these are very, very important awards. We have more goals this year than we have ever had.
So we'll put the video back up in case you couldn't hear what was going on. In terms of acknowledgements, I mean, here's a group of people who've just had coffee and donuts and are part of the core of the team that was involved, but it was a very big team. And we had a lot of input, both from sponsors, but also within the university itself. And without 30 or 40 people, it really wouldn't have happened. So we've just recently received an invitation to show again. and I'm leaving the country. Katie's looking for a new job, so maybe in the long term. But it was a great deal of work, and we very much appreciate all of the effort and all of the interest we've had from people, particularly people who visited the stand, who just came up and said, it's really interesting what you're doing, keep doing it. And I think for researchers, we tend to get sort of quite bogged down in the day-to-day and what we're doing, and sometimes it's quite hard to see that what we're doing is really very interesting when you're stuck in the paperwork and, you know. So it was really nice, and it was a good opportunity for some of our younger researchers especially to have a chance to talk to people and know that they are appreciated and what we're doing is appreciated. And it was really exciting, and it was quite humbling that people really thought that what we were doing is interesting and could make a difference. So that's really it in terms of the talk. I mean, there's a lot of material on the back bench, including the video of the stand being put together and plants put into that. This is all that's available. Most of the videos are actually available on YouTube. You can get a link through there. And it will, I think almost all of the videos are on that website, as well as things like the booklet and some of the background information. It just remains for me to thank you for coming, and certainly a good audience. And I hope it was an interesting talk, and please do feel free to speak to people here. There's at least half a dozen, if not more, people who are involved and who have other experiences or worked on different aspects of it. So thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Okay, you're willing to take some questions.
I'll try.
And if not, between
between all of us, we can answer, maybe.
I'm sure we'll be able to answer various parts of it. So does anyone have any questions for Sean or anybody else? Or have you learned so much already?
You mentioned the Bambara crop. What was that? What's that? You mentioned the Bambara that was on the display. What's that?
Yes, it's an African indigenous crop, and it basically looks quite a lot like peanut does. But it was there in Africa before peanut, which is South American, was introduced. And the main characteristic it's got is it's more drought tolerant than peanut. So it has the potential to be grown in very poor soils, or sometimes where the amount of rain is actually quite limited, and sometimes where peanut probably can't be grown. It's still grown quite broadly in many ways, in that African, particularly sub-Saharan African subsistence farmers tend to grow it. It tends to be a woman's crop as well, so that the woman of the household will grow Bambara, the men will grow maize, which they'll sell for money. So the Bambara's got quite an interesting niche, and culturally it's quite important to a lot of people. So one of the things that we're trying to do, I guess, is understand more about how the crop works and what the problems with it are, because it's not a major crop. So that there are a number of issues in terms of how it grows, particularly yield stability, and one of those is actually in terms of day length. So if we can do some focused research on some of the problems that some of these smaller crops have, we can maybe overcome those so they can become more useful within communities, but also potentially give a more stable yield. So there's always something that produces a yield, because obviously the problem tends to be if you lose an entire crop, you have certainly in smallholder situations, you have major problems.
So nutritionally it's good,
Nutritionally it's good. It's actually a bean. It's a bean, because peanuts have lots of oil, so it doesn't have so much oil, but nutritionally it's good. It's got a good balance of amino acids, and it's actually quite liked. I mean, there's a small-scale market, not a large-scale market, but a small-scale market, particularly when people move to cities, and they used to have it when they were children, so there's quite a demand. But it does have problems, which mean it's not very, very broadly grown, at this point at least.
Do you have any sort of clear view on how we're going to feed the world population in the future, and did this study show that? I mean, is the way forward or one of them like hydroponics or something else, you know, that's clear focus?
I think the stand was trying to show some of the things that we think are needed in terms of changing the way, to some extent, we do agriculture, diversifying agriculture. Personally, I think we face such a big challenge that I think it's going to be a mixture of lots of different things, and different things will be relevant in different countries. So we're not suggesting... we're doing a lot of work on wheat anyway. We're not suggesting that it's not important to really improve major cereals, because it will be, because they're key. But by themselves, they may not be enough. And things like urban agriculture, and Chung Wei at the back is involved in some experiments on urban agriculture, potentially hydroponics in that situation, could be one way that you can grow food close to where it's being eaten, and help. It's never going to replace production of food outside, but it could help.
It was a big step going to Chelsea. How did you arrive? Because it didn't really, on the face of it, gel properly, did it? But it did in the end.
I think rumour suggests that Paul here had a word with the VC and he thought it was a good idea. So that's where the initial idea came from, I think. So they say.
That's where it started. It wasn't just me saying to the Vice Chancellor, look, we should do this. We had we're in a competition about excellence with impact as to how we got our research messages across. And we held a workshop and someone came up with the idea of going to Chelsea to display our research. And then one day the VC was here and we talked to him about various things and said, well, this is an opportunity, and he just said, go and do it. So, I mean, as you can imagine, an organisation like this, when the person at the top says, well, just go and do it, then everybody gets a little bit more excited and says, okay, now we need to see how we can make it work. So, it started from humble beginnings, but then there was an awful lot of work, as Sean's just shown, to get us to where we went.
I think the key to it was really getting what we were trying to do clear, so that it wasn't trying to recruit or it wasn't trying to bring in research funding. It was really trying to talk to people. And I think if we had done any of the other things, it wouldn't have worked, because the people going to Chelsea are fairly savvy. I mean, they know when they're being sold something. And that wasn't why we wanted to go. We wanted to go really to talk to people. That's your one.
It's a nice venue. I think, as Sean said, at the end, we've been through an awful lot in terms of a learning curve, but it took an awful lot of staff time and student time and money to get us there. The planning process that Sean outlined is quite long-winded, so I think to try and give you a direct answer, I don't think we'll rule that out. Tend to go to Hampton Court, but it's certainly not something we're going to do in the next year or so, because it's just so much energy and effort that needs to go into doing it.
Do they have the same sort of thing in China or Malaysia? I mean, is there the opportunity there to do the same sort of thing?
That's a good question, actually.
What was the question?
Do they do the same sort of thing, or is there the same opportunity in China and Malaysia? Certainly in China, some of the ideas in terms of the hydroponics, there's a big centre in China. Again, if you want to know more, talk to Chung Wei at the back, which does a lot of this sort of hydroponic and urban greening and urban gardening. And I had actually visited that before we got to this stage for a completely different reason. Malaysia, well, the crops for the future domes also are sitting 3 hectares of land. And one of the ideas is that we would actually try to produce a garden, relatively small, but a garden around them, which would illustrate some of the crops that we're working on, as well as some of the major crops. So that's one opportunity. I'm not... Peter, you're more on the horticultural side. Is there something you can recommend in terms of... In terms of opportunities in China and Malaysia, do Are there similar sorts of shows?
You may see it next somewhere else around the world. Okay, I think if there are no further questions, I'm going to wrap things up. And as Sean said, there's the displays over there, and lunch has just arrived. But before we do wrap up, just a few things from me. Peter's just said a few words. Peter's going to be our next speaker on the 17th of October. Peter's been out in Malaysia for however many years it has been. Quite a few years. So Peter's a very well-established member of staff at Nottingham, who's sat in Bonington for a long time, and then he went out to Malaysia to effectively set up our courses and our research that's happened out in our Malaysia campus. Peter's now back in the UK, embedded as a member of staff here again, but he's going to come and talk to us on the 17th of October about effectively taking biosciences out into that tropical environment. So hopefully that's something to excite you in terms of coming back in the middle of October. So that's the 17th of October. We'll hold it at the same time, I think, 12:30. I just want to thank Sean for his talk, but in thanking Sean for his talk, I also want to thank Katie, because without Katie and Sean pulling this together, they've been very modest in terms of all of the big team that went around delivering Chelsea, but frankly, without these two at the heart of it, driving it, with all of that extra work, it would never have happened. So in thanking Sean, I also want to thank Katie as well. So if we can show our appreciation.